The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzler. To Indo-Pacific, Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, keeping us informed about AUKUS, Australia, United Kingdom, and the U.S., conjoined these last years in measuring how effective, how threatening China is. The answer, very threatening. So AUKUS is a major component of surrounding the People's Republic of China with the intention to stop a war, not to start one. If you want peace, prepare for war. AUKUS is preparation, except it's theory now. It hasn't actually happened. It's Western Australia, Perth, and the naval port of Fremantle. And Gregory's here to inform us as to where it is in the development plans. Because, Gregory, I mentioned in the news, the Solomon Islands are now under the control of some very rich people out of Beijing, the Communist Party, buying influence, Sogavare, the prime minister, and other parts of the grouping of islands. That's very close. That approaches the Australian shores. This looks to be China's answer to AUKUS, or is it? Good evening again.
Oh, good evening, John. Well, certainly the PRC's control of the Solomons is nothing like a counterweight to AUKUS. It's part of the PRC's version of the Greater Asia Co-Prosperity Sphere, which was the Imperial Japanese planning or concept of the 1930s and early 40s, and it is an overextension of the PRC's capability. Yes, the PRC has the possibility of being able to project forces further southward than even Japan was at the start of World War II, not just into the Solomons, but also potentially into Bougainville. They've got the possibility of other areas of southward expansion as well, in other words, outside of the first island chain. But it's nothing like the AUKUS situation, which is the overwhelming counterweight in a sense. But it also, you look at AUKUS, the Australia, United Kingdom, United States treaty, which was created in September 2021, and it's something which would work very closely with, for example, Japan and the Japan-US alliance. So if you started to see that breakout by the PRC against the US interest in the Western and Central Pacific and around Guam and the like, you would start to see Japan and AUKUS moving in harmony along with the Philippines. And basically the first line of defense there would be to support the survival of the Republic of China on Taiwan. That doesn't mean that the PRC is going to take that lightly. They are already trying to project capabilities, resources, and basing outside of the first island chain, such as the Solomon. Now, the reality is that the first big AUKUS stretch, and by the way, it's really very much an Australian national situation. Yes, there are some submarine basing in Fremantle, near south of Fremantle, just on the west coast of Australia, and that's always been one of the key areas to controlling Indian Ocean and Pacific maritime lanes. And in World War II, Fremantle was the second biggest U.S. submarine base of the war in the Indo-Pacific. There were dozens and dozens of U.S. attack submarines there. Now, the Royal Australian Navy is getting close to a decision which will be discussed in a meeting in the second half of March, probably after March 16, March 17, in Washington, between President Joe Biden, the Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, and Prime Minister Sunak from the United Kingdom. They're going to be having a big AUKUS meeting there. It is probable that the Australia, US Navy ex-US Navy Virginia class attack submarines, and probably the older ones, just to start Australia on the path of operating nuclear attack submarines before Australia can build its own. Now, the Australian process of building its own nuclear submarines is very, very complex. There are many things to do, including getting the Australian nuclear industry going again so that they can maintain and actually build power reactors in Australia. So it's probably going to be 18 to 20 years before Australia actually builds its own submarine, and that would probably be a new design, heavily engaging US and British technology, bearing in mind that the US and the United Kingdom are already closely cooperate, I mean intimately cooperate, in nuclear propulsion for submarines and on the weapon systems and sensors and the like, which go along with that. So Australia has already been very closely allied with the United States on its conventional submarine program. Its six existing Collins-class submarines are really brought to a new level of capabilities. It was originally a Swedish design, but really brought to a new level of capability because of technological cooperation between Australia and the United States in the field of weapon systems, command and control, and particularly in, for example, developing a new screw, a new propeller for the vessel based on US technology, which made it much sweeter, much quieter than the original Swedish submarine design. So this pattern of cooperation will continue. I think it's possible the US will go for the sale or lease of those of one or two of the Virginia class submarines. Australia already has officers and men training on the British Astute class nuclear attack submarines, as well as on U.S. Virginia-class submarines. So they're really getting into the rhythm of that. The AUKUS also involves upgrading surface combatant vessels. It's particularly engaging with the U.S. On hypersonic weapons, which Australia is developing, on unmanned combat aerial vehicles, particularly major combat vehicles, which would fight alongside the F-35s and longer range strike aircraft of the Royal Australian Air Force. Australia is looking at buying another couple of dozen at least F-35s, and that may be discussed at the meeting in March in Washington, D.C. It's really going to be significant. And Australia has just taken the decision that the Labor Party government is changing out the Australian ambassador to Washington, because the current and very, very effective ambassador, Arthur Sinodinos, who was appointed from the previous Liberal Party government, and he himself was a former Liberal Party minister, he's going to be retired and replaced by a former Australian Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd. He was Prime Minister. He was Foreign Minister at one stage. He's a fluent Mandarin speaker. And although I don't think he will be as hands-on with the details as Arthur Sinodinos has been, and he will certainly send a message to the United States that the US-Australian relationship has been significantly upgraded. Now, this pushes all back against two U.S. senators, Jack Reed, the Democrat from Rhode Island, and Jim Inhofe, the Republican from Oklahoma, who have been trying to stop this transfer of Virginia-class submarines to Australia because they say the U.S. doesn't have enough submarines of its own, and this would be detrimental to U.S. strategic industrial capability if they're asked to build more in the U.S. I asked the question of both of them was, how would they feel about the loss of an alliance partner, an alliance partner which could actually work in harmony with the U.S. and the U.S. Navy as an alternative to just sitting on their thumbs here in Washington?
One of the major problems for the U.S. Navy is the industrial base. That's true for the Army and the Air Force, too, but especially for the Navy. Australia had an industrial base for this kind of shipbuilding after World War I, you report, after World War II. Is it now intending to reestablish its industrial base to turn out and refit submarines in Perth?
Well, it's not just refitting them in Perth. They would do it on both coasts. or probably also in near Adelaide in the south central part on the Southern Ocean, where they're building the submarine, the old and the new submarines. They'll be building them in South Australia. The Australian industrial base has always been there, but successive governments have allowed it to be subordinated to foreign interests. So instead of, as they once were, building total platforms, total systems, they built several of the world's most capable jet and propeller fighters. They, let's face it, Orville and Wilbur Wright's box kite design, which they experimented with in the US in 1903 and 104, that was an Australian design given to them by Lawrence Hargrave, who was their great collaborator and designer of the airframe. That's all been forgotten, of course, but you had this incredible capability in two world wars and in the post-World War II period of Australia building airliners, combat aircraft, and so on. And yet governments have shut that down and said, and have succumbed, as Britain did, to the U.S. blandishment of saying, well, you know, guys, you buy our fighter and we'll give you, you know, a very substantial chunk of the work workload of that project. And by the way, that's the U.K. bought the F-35 fighters from the U.S. on the basis, and by the way, was one of the original investors in the F-35. It's not just a Lockheed Martin product. It's a Lockheed Martin British Aerospace product. And yet today, of course, it's now seen as totally a Lockheed Martin project. Britain contributed to the R&D, which got it going, is contributing some of the technology, but at the loss of the UK's industrial base. Same with Australia. They're building bits and pieces for the F-35 and for Boeing 787s and you name it, but they've lost the control of new platforms. And whereas other countries around the world have not lost that. Look at Brazil, which and Brazil and Australia were in the at the turn of the 20th century, were two of the great powerhouses of aviation innovation. And today, Brazil is producing and selling airliners around the world. It's producing combat transport aircraft. It's producing fighter aircraft and the like. And Australia lost that capability, and that's part of losing sovereignty. So this present government, the Labor government, is all about subordinating Australian industry to foreign projects and foreign ownership. And this is, I think, a huge mistake, but it's part of the Labor mentality, and I think that's not going to change very easily or quickly. And just as Prime Minister Albanese is trying to change a lot of facts on the ground, including, for example, moving to take over all of governments and removing the crown as head of state of Australia by, for example, refusing to put King Charles' image on the $5 bill, where in place of the of Queen Elizabeth's image on the previous
that's what $5 bills. This is what you mean by little Australia or sidekick status. That would
you
be
bet.
That would be very unpopular in the Australia I talk to regularly. Is it? I wouldn't want to call anybody little Australia.
Well, I mean, they should be ashamed of themselves, frankly, and I no doubt will have a number of doors shut in my face when I return to Canberra in the next month or two. But the reality is that there are so many Australians who think they need to kowtow to Beijing, kowtow to Washington and the like. Look, Australia is a highly credible middle power, population 26 million. I mean, look at Britain in 1880 when it was the superpower of the world, and it had 30 million people. So, look, it's not about population size. It's about education. It's about unity. It's about supporting innovation and the like. And that only comes when you have, freedom in the economy to encourage entrepreneurship.
It's not the way you play cricket either, Gregory. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're headed to balloons. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Patrick.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows, but the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. When you need me, I'll be by
your side. The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.